Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Well, every once in a while, it's kind of become a habit, maybe once or twice a year, I come on this program and I mention that I recorded an audiobook recently. If you're new to this program, yeah, it's a thing I kind of do every now and then. Well, more than every now and then. I am an audiobook recording artist. And occasionally, a book comes my way that I think is worthy of discussion on this program. Now, keep in mind that those of us who are in the audiobook recording business, we rarely have the opportunity to choose audiobooks. They choose us one way or another. Perhaps it's a casting director, just like in the movies or on television. The audiobook industry has casting directors, and they might just say, oh, this person has a good voice for this kind of story. And then sometimes you have to audition, as one would have to do in Hollywood. Well, recently, someone from B-Audio, one of the major audiobook recording companies, contacted me and said, would you like to do a book called Our Pristine Mind? And they explained that it was from a Tibetan Lama. And I said, yes, I would love to do that. Well, it turned out that I really appreciated this book very much on several levels. And I had the opportunity to speak to the author of Our Pristine Mind, Orgyen Chawang. And after I finished, I said, why don't you come on the program? And he assented. So he is here with us today by way of telephone, and I would like to tell you a little bit about Orgyen Chawang Rinpoche. He is a meditation master in the Dzogchen lineage of the Buddhist tradition, with a particular passion for presenting these teachings in a practical and experiential way for a modern audience. He studied for 9 years with his teacher, one of the greatest masters of the 20th century. After completing his studies and receiving the highest degree of Buddhist study and practice, he spent several years teaching lamas, monks, and Western students at a monastery in Nepal. Since 1995, Rinpoche has lived in the United States. He resides in the San Francisco Bay Area, where he is the founder and spiritual director of Pristine Mind Foundation. He conducts retreats and offers teachings throughout the U.S. and around the world for a broad range of audiences, including business and technology professionals, parents, children, healthcare providers, psychologists, spiritual seekers, and yoga practitioners. His teachings are also available online through live streams and recordings. And we welcome to Common Threads, Orgyen Chawang Rinpoche. Hello, Rinpoche.
Hello, Fred.
How are you?
Good, good, good. Very wonderful. How are you doing?
Just fine. Thank you so much for joining us today. Rinpoche, before we get to the actual book itself, I'd love to know a little bit more about your background, because this I didn't even know when I was recording the book. So are you a refugee from Tibet, or were you born in India?
I was not born in India, you know, Nepal, you know.
Nepal. Oh, Nepal.
Yes, yeah, Nepal, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you are of Tibetan, ethnically you're Tibetan, am I correct?
Yes.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about how your family got to Nepal from Tibet.
The family means not just get there, you know, like Nepal, you know. Himalaya region is already hundreds of years. Mount Everest, that area is, you know, right now part of Nepal, but usually, you know, like long time, they are part of, you know, Tibet. Nepal is, you know, they call Sherpas, you know, that's Sherpa is Tibetan name. There are many ethnic Tibetans and living and inside Nepal in hundreds of years. After the 1950s, I don't know, that time, Second World War time, that became, you know, a different country. But before that, and that area has many different kind of ethnic groups living. The religion is Tibetan Buddhism, and ethnic is Tibetan people living many different areas around Mount Everest. in a high Puto Tibetan and Nepali border, and then mix of Nepalese and Tibetans in that area living and hundreds of thousands of years. Therefore, Nepali has many different ethnic groups also, and therefore one is the Tibetan, there's another also groups. And I think that's that area that has a special story. I think you need to know, and that area, you need to really know the story about Nepali or Tibetan or that area story, I think, very clearly. Therefore, I was there for family generations. They are Tibetan people.
I see. So the Chinese takeover of Tibet really has nothing to do with your story. You and your family.
Nothing to do with, just. I don't, in one way, I don't much pay attention to much stories, you know. I was just born then. I was more pursuing more meditation, you know, to do lots more meditation practice and also give spiritual practice, you know. And I didn't much pay attention. I was younger time stories, you know. I don't know very much story about history that, and never interesting before. I'm still not really interesting. Therefore, I was more, you know, too drawn to the spirituality and meditation. That's right now. I'm doing that right now. And especially come to U.S. That's my job. It's right now.
Sure, sure. I understand that. When you were a boy, did you enter a monastery at a very young age?
Yes, I went to and monastery inside Tibet and outside Tibet. And I have many different educations. Yeah, I see many lamas and do many different practices. And we look, Tibetan tradition. We are seeking many teachers. There's only one. I always went to the meditation retreat center, not just monastery. You know, there's education, mostly studying, and then do practice. You know, monasteries, they usually use lots of rituals, but I'm not familiar many rituals. I'm familiar more, the philosophy of the meditation and also do practice. I just studied many years, and then after that, I just, I have very good, I have good teacher. I think that's the number one important for our lineage or culture. So you have number one teacher, and then teacher is primary your focus, and then when you have best teacher, and then can train best way. Therefore, I'm very fortunately I have very wonderful teacher. Therefore, I have properly trained under the teacher.
Now, my understanding of the Tibetan strain of Buddhism is that it is very ritual-oriented, much more so than other strains of Buddhism, such as Theravada Buddhism or often Zen Buddhism. But you're saying that there are schools of Tibetan Buddhism where ritual is not stressed, that the contemplative life is much more important. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yeah, there's many different levels, you know. There's rituals, that's one level. There's philosophy. There's meditation. You know, different groups, different people. You know, what you are interested in, you can go that. You are interested in rituals, practice, and you can go that, learning rituals and also ceremonies, and you can do that. And the other thing is you can learn philosophy, you know, Buddhist philosophy, you can go learn that. The other thing is you can just go to meditation, studying of meditation and then just practice that. But some people do all three things together. Some people do just only, they're choosing one thing. And I was not much familiar ritual, you know. Even I just do practice, few rituals involved, not much. Most mainly studying of the human life and studying of the mind. And then what is really the, enlightenment is how to achieve enlightenment. How do you bring unconditional happiness with your life and others? You know, like compassion, happiness, meditation, transforming life, and, you know, like all these things are my, I focus these studies and when I was studying. And that's just not focused, and also your practice and how to achieve these things. That's mainly my goal is, for example, and then, when I was studying. Therefore, when I was, you know, studying, I just focused that. Therefore, it's not really ritual, not only ritual. There are many different aspects and Tibetan Buddhism.
What is it that brought you to the United States?
I think I was brought in here to there's one Lama and teacher in New York. He asked me to come to the U.S. to visit him. And then he asked me, and then I was came to visit him. And from, you know, he's living in New York, upstate New York State. I just visited him. Then 2 months, then he asked me to stay in the United States to teach the people. And then I was, I don't know any English at that time. I was, even I don't say hello. But then I was, I know many, like some translators and some Westerners, you know, helped me. And then just I learned English and stay here over that.
And how long have you been here?
I've been since 1995.
That's
I
right.
I came in 1995 in August. Since then, I've been mostly living in California and, you know, like Bay Area. And then since then, you know, like almost like 20, I don't know, like some 20 years also.
Yeah, okay. That's very good. Now, you have other books out besides the one that we're talking about today called Our Pristine Mind. Tell us a little bit about what inspired your earlier works and how you got to this particular book here. Specifically, I'm wondering if you think that your works should be studied like a course, where you should read the first book, you should read the second book, or can you read any of the books?
Yes, actually, this is my first book. I don't have any other book, you know. I just tried to write books before, but this is my first book, you know. And, you know, then I try to write some other books. I'm right now working on another book, but this is my first book.
You know what I'm, like, yeah, you know what I'm, Rinpoche, I'm remembering from recording it that you talked about writing other books, but
yes,
that they never happened. That's right.
They never happened because, you know, I was working one book and then somewhere, you know, like almost finished half. Then I started this, you know, I was tried to the first part. I was working first part and then came differently. Then I just put that book aside and just Our Pristine Mind, that's, you know, I just began there, and I just came different book, then I just started this book. You know, I didn't fit, there's two other manuscripts, but I didn't publish that, and started this is the primary work I did, and that's really reason, you know, I didn't have another book. I just tried to two books, you know, working, but that's not really published. And then maybe, I hope, maybe future, they can publish.
Right, right. Yeah, that's what I'm remembering. The other two manuscripts, you do mention them in this book, and I, for some reason, thought they got published. I would like to mention that you are listening to Common Threads here on WGVU-FM. I'm Fred Stella, and joining me today is Orgyen Chawang Rinpoche. He is the author of the book Our Pristine Mind, A Practical Guide to Unconditional Happiness. Rinpoche, I think a lot of people would be surprised to look at this title and think that it's a pretty big promise, A Practical Guide to Unconditional Happiness. Most of us would say that, well, the human condition almost requires us to have periods of happiness and periods of sadness, periods of anger, periods of joy, that we tend to go back and forth almost from minute to minute. We can be having a lovely time driving in the car, and then all of a sudden we see a traffic jam. And our level of happiness, we might not get angry or in pain or anything, but we're driving and uh-oh, there's a traffic jam. Our level of happiness tends to go down. Or we could be with someone having a great time, enjoying conversation, and then that person might bring up something political, and that political view might be different from the one you hold. And right away, there's a little bit of tension there. It's hard, almost impossible for most people to imagine being unconditionally happy. How do you address that in a way that will allay any skepticism?
Okay, that's wonderful. Thank you. Good question. Unconditional happiness. One thing is there's conditional happiness. You see something, you went to a restaurant, you entertain external conditions are called conditional happiness. From the conditions make you feel good and feel satisfied, feel pleasured. It's called conditional happiness. Everybody knows. But the real, and when I'm talking about is unconditional happiness. Unconditional happiness means two things. When your mind is clear through meditation, mind is become more pristine or clear, then you are found comfortableness within you and sense comforts, not come from external conditions. And you tell, for example, says when we go every day, sometimes we feel good, then next moment we are unhappy, next moment we are happy, then go through like that. The reason is we have that, we are stuck in our thoughts, emotions. Therefore, the more we have thoughts, emotions, the more we have up, downs, lots. And the more mind is, distorted. For example, each time, let's say today we feel very good 1 hour, and that means that moment our mind is clear. The clear mind, happiness go together. When your mind is clear, and there's happiness. And then your mind is distorted, thinking negative emotions. You're caught up in your thoughts. Let's say someone did something, I don't like that. The more you think that, that means your mind is distorted. And the more distortion and happiness go together. And sometimes polluted mind is together. When you meditating, what happens is meditation's job is clear your mind. When you're meditating, your mind is clear. When your mind is clear, you find in without any condition, your mind naturally feel good, feel content, feel relaxed, feel enjoy. I think that is called unconditional happiness. I think this is usually people don't have an everyday life. They don't know how to, one way they don't know how to meditate, but if you don't know how to clarify your mind, and maybe even if they don't know meditation, but they don't know how to meditate properly. But throughout, I was teaching not just only in Asia, I came to U.S., I teach people how to clear their mind. Once their mind is clear, they're happy no matter what. If your mind is distorted, polluted, like say you're stuck in your mental events, anything, how circumstances are good, still you're not enjoy. It's happiness is nothing to do external condition. It's always to do with your state of mind. And the state of mind is clear, there's happiness, there's a fulfillment, there's enjoy, there's peace of mind, there's tranquility, there's dignity, or there's strong presence about everything's wonderful and tranquility. But you, at the other side, if your mind is polluted and distorted, negative, positive thoughts, there's anxiety, fear, stress, everything to do with your mind. Therefore, I think number one reason is unconditional happiness, how to clarify your mind through meditation. Therefore, more meditators have unconditional happiness because they know how to clarify their mind.
Now, a lot of people, I've spoken to so many people who say, I can't meditate. And I'll ask them, well, you know, they'll say, I've tried to, but it doesn't work. And I will say, well, what did you do when you sat down to meditate? What little method did you use to try to meditate that you didn't think you were successful in? And they'll say, well, I sat down and I tried to clear my mind. And I'm thinking, well, that's a noble effort, but you can't just sit down and clear your mind. It's a little bit more complicated than that. But you give methods without getting too terribly intricate. We really can't do that right now on the radio. But without getting intricate, can you give us just a somewhat of an understanding of what you ask people to do when you say, sit down and clear the mind and meditate?
Okay, thank you. And I think that's a very important question is, how do you clarify a mind? And it's like, I think most people think there are many things going on. And first, people think the problem is they know how to meditate, but that's really sometimes, if you know meditate, even that means you know how to clarify mind. But most people don't know how to meditate. And the second is they need to have meditation instructor and someone's qualified meditation. That he or she has many years experience doing meditation, how to clarify his own mind, some level. You have some guru realization. And then third is you need to train to meditate. You know, first you learn in meditation, but then after you learn, and then you meditate. But you don't meditate just today. Someone's begin today, that means you're learning meditation maybe next 2-3 weeks or even a month. And after you learned, and then you meditate. For example, like this, and you're learning drive. You don't drive today, but you're learning driving and next 2-3 maybe days and maybe 1-2 weeks sometimes, depend people. And then you drive. Similarly, I think people know how to learn in meditation. The only what is really means how do you stay present without distraction. You know, I think that's important. How do you stay present and without distraction? And for example, number one meditation is, stay present. For example, you can watch breath, or you can focus some, image, and you stay with a single point, one image, and then you only 99% thoughts are disappear because you're not thinking of problems or good or bad things. Just only thinking one thing, And then how do you stay with that one focus, I think that's one meditation is. It's really how do you focus that. And therefore, I think sometimes people have big expectations, like meditation means, I think at the moment I meditate, my mind is clear. It's not true. And beginner practitioners, their mind is chaos. That's more normal. That means you are just beginner. You need to take a little bit longer, like exercise. You just cannot do one exercise losing 5 pounds, You need to have, just begin, today you do exercise, tomorrow, then over time you're losing 5 pounds, 10 pounds. But just only one session exercise cannot losing 5 pounds. Similarly, if someone's meditating, just one stay, the moment they stay down, meditate, they don't, their mind is chaos. That's normal. I think people need to know, when you begin in meditation, mind is chaos, that's normal. Over time, they calm down. I think that means they take more time. I think more time, then slowly, I know I can do meditation. And maybe 1-3 weeks, maybe month, you diligently follow the introductions. I think that's really important to take a little bit of time.
When you teach people to meditate, do you have to deal with a lot of impatience on their part?
Yes, people have big expectations. They think the number one problem is they think they know the meditation already. But you need a really introduction. Most people don't know how to meditate. What's the goal? What's the goal of meditation? Most people say, if you, for example, people know when they go to exercise, they go to gym, they know how to, most people, you know, there's trainer, and also they can, you know, just walk in or like, plan, you know, work with missions. They know what his goal is. Goal is become healthy and lose weight, you know, like get energy. And most people don't know what the goal of meditation is. You know, they say, oh, I'm doing meditation this way, that way. And then people ask me, can you fix my meditation? I ask first, what kind of meditation you do? What do you want? And people don't know what kind of meditation they do. People don't know what they want. And then, you know, people don't know what they're doing. Therefore, first, I think it's very important what you want from the, you know, to meditate, you know, what kind of techniques you're using. I think that's very important. And there's inpatient, and then that's, and they treat meditation as religious, you know. Religion, you don't need, you know, many explanations, just have faith. But meditation is, you know, it's not really religion, it's really how to work with the mind, you know, like how working with your thoughts, a little bit more beyond of religion. I think it's more universal, you know. Everybody has body, and you need working your body, losing weight, become healthy. That's nothing to do with the religion. And how do you clarify your mind, and how to feel unconditional happiness? It's nothing to do with the religion. Everybody understand that, you know. Therefore, I think you cannot treat meditation like religious way. You need meditation like practical way. And therefore, and they know. And then I think beginning how their expectations, you know, what did you expect? I told beginner meditators, you know, your mind is chaos, beginner. That's normal. It's, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. It's really completely normal. I tell them, and then make them feel good. Then slowly they can pursue. I think then they get result.
Rinpoche, we are out of time for this program, but I have many more questions to ask you. I'm hoping that you'll be able to join us next week.
That'd be wonderful. Yeah, of course. I can. Happy to enjoy. Thank you, Fred.
You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. My guest today has been Orgyen Chawang Rinpoche, talking about his book, Our Pristine Mind, which is also available in audiobook form, courtesy of yours truly, actually. Please join us again next week here on WGVU for more conversation.